Today's biggest stories, tomorrow's newsmakers in the capital city. Your host is Michael Cohen for the Capital City Recap on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
And welcome in at 10 minutes after 6 o'clock. It's not Michael Cohen, it's Tim Nestor here on 1320 WILS for, three more days, I suppose, because I'll continue guest hosting on into next week, Monday and Tuesday. Glad to have everybody along as there's some light snow out in the capital city. What was a beautiful day under sunny skies and above normal temperatures has unfortunately fallen a little bit this evening. The roads, not too bad. I was out on them earlier, not really any slick spots to report, but make sure you give yourself a little extra time because anytime there's snowflakes, you get the chance for ice and, things could be mucked up a little bit. You may know me from doing weather on Channel 6 WLNS over the weekend, as well as the Michigan Business News on the MichiganBusinessNetwork.com. Glad to have everybody along, and we will have a pretty good show for you tonight as we've got lots of news coming out of the GM profits, and some of the reaction on social media has been downright venomous. We will look into that a little bit and chat with a couple of people about what the impact is for General Motors and the $7,000 profit sharing checks that go to people who are working on the line. Yesterday, we talked to Thomas Glossmacher from MSU, the manager of the FRIB project, Facility for Rare Isotope Beams. One of Michigan's congressional delegates weighs in on that, and we will have her reaction. And by saying her, I think I just gave it away of who it actually is. Bob Lutz, the former vice chairman of General Motors, was over the last couple of days talking about sustainable renewable energy and why that may be a good thing and why it's taking too long for us to adopt. And Mayor Virge Bernero may have a little bit of hot water to talk about because there's somebody involved in the casino project that might have been greasing the wheels. We'll have the story from Angela Wittrock from MLive.com a little bit later on as well. And Catherine Draper, the executive director from the Greater Lansing Housing Coalition, is going to join us. They run a foreclosure prevention counseling program. And, you've seen the rates of foreclosure in Michigan and particularly in the Lansing area kind of decrease over the last couple of months. And there was a big settlement reached between the 50 states and the five largest lenders. There may be some bad news about why foreclosures could creep up again in 2012. We'll talk to her about that, as well as a big fundraiser that they've got going on next week, which should be pretty exciting. First, though, we bring in our first guest of the evening. He is from the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. His name is Michael Van Beek, and he is the Education Policy Director there. Michael, thank you for being along. Glad to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Tim. Glad to be here.
Yesterday, we talked a little bit to the Michigan State Education folks, Department of Education, about the MEEP scores and how all of a sudden because of the tougher standards that they just put in place, the MEEP score, especially in the Lansing area and the three of the big districts near around the Lansing area, have suddenly plummeted. There are a number of reasons why that is. Most of the reason why that is they're finally adopting some more stringent testing scores, and it may take a little while to get everybody back into where they should be, according to the MEEP tests. Meanwhile, charter schools continue to use that as ammunition to bolster their argument that there should be more school of choice alternatives, more options for parents to send their kids to if schools can't get the job done. And one of them is cyber schools, which is taking advantage of high technology and distance learning. And in many cases, the Michigan Virtual Charter Academies have started showing some moderate levels of success. You've wrote a piece for the Mackinac Center for Public Policy's website talking about just that. There's a bill to increase the cap on the number of Michigan public school students who can participate in full-time online charter cyber schools. This bill, how far is it along, and what does it mean to parents?
Well, currently, the bill is on the House floor. It's passed out of the Senate, and it's passed out of the House Education Committee. And I think that a vote will be likely next week in the House. I've heard that from a couple different places. So that's where the bill currently is. For parents, there are about 10,000 kids and families that are waiting on lists right now to get into these kinds of schools. That's a large amount of parents and families whose whose options are, you know, being limited and being this being their number one option being denied them. And these kinds of schools work for parents and students for a variety of different reasons. They work for students who want to accelerate their learning, who, you know, sitting in the classroom, they're bored. They work for students who might have medical issues. They work for students who might have, you know, issues of being distracted in the classroom, students who have attention deficiency disorders, those kinds of things. And so for a lot of different parents and for a lot of different reasons, these schools are looking very attractive to them.
Can this actually work, though, an online distance learning for high school and in some cases middle school and elementary kids? I mean, can kids actually get any hands-on learning through this program?
They can, and the remarkable thing is the technologies that we have now. You know, I've gone and visited some of these schools, and you know, they interact directly with a classroom teacher. It's just all of the communication happens over the internet. So they work with a teacher in real time, and the teacher can show them problems, can demonstrate things for them that appears on their computer. And one of the things that these kinds of programs do is they actually enhance the way that education is delivered. So, for instance, all of these lectures and all of these presentations by teachers are recorded. And so students can go back and watch them again if they didn't get something. And it also allows parents to have much more flexibility. You know, their child doesn't necessarily have to sit in school from 8 o'clock until 3 o'clock every day to do their work. They can have more flexibility around their own schedule.
It sounds good to have the choice out there for parents. What's the counter argument to this? What's the downside? What are you hearing as some feedback?
Well, generally the main opponents of allowing parents to choose to have this option are the public school establishment, the school employee unions, special interest groups that represent, you know, superintendents, school boards, and they view this as another level of competition. If parents have this option as well as some of the other options that they have to enroll in schools that are not run by school boards, not managed by superintendents, and not employed by unions, then, you know, they view these as a competitive threat, and that's where a lot of that opposition comes from. But the other area where it comes from, it's new. You know, it's a new program. Many people don't understand it. You know, there's hardly anyone who was educated in this way. It is new, and I think there's a lot of skepticism and just with the unfamiliarity that people have with this, it makes them very skeptical.
Is there a way to potentially, whether through this bill, through this legislation, or through some type of cooperative partnership, to me it sounds like it would be a great supplement to have a brick-and-mortar institution as well as an online component. Is there some way to maybe tweak this a little bit to get the best of both worlds and make it exist in the current system, or is this an either-or proposition?
Well, the ironic thing is that it already does exist as a supplement for many school districts. Many school districts use online learning tools, and they use actually some of the very same curriculum and the very same course providers that these schools use. The difference with these schools is that it's a full-time option. And so what that does is it provides parents with a lot more flexibility over how education is delivered. And again, you know, for the student who is distracted in the classroom, who's bored in the classroom, who has medical issues, who's homebound, you know, this is really a godsend for them. A blended or a mix of one or the other, or a mix of both, wouldn't necessarily fit for every student. So this is the full time option that works for some of those students who have some of those peculiarities that makes this work well.
How much of the budget would be siphoned off of local school districts if more and more people applied for these?
Well, the school districts are funded on a per pupil basis. State aid amounts to about $7,000 a student. And so if a student enrolls in a cyber full-time online charter school from a district school, that money would follow the child from the district school to the online charter school. And this is the same thing that happens when parents choose between districts. You know, so money is moving all over the place based on where students are enrolled. And you know, this is just one more element, one more choice that parents would have.
And that's the argument, I suppose. Isn't there some way to just make sure that we fund districts, you know, sort of evenly? But it doesn't sound like that can be done legislatively. This does at least offer an option for kids to who may be trapped in a school district that they don't want to be in. I don't mean to use those words, because obviously there are a number of educators who would sort of bristle at the phrase trapped. But this, it sounds like it's offering kids who may be stuck in a school district that they can't quite get out of, their first option for school of choice programs may be taken. It's just one more thing, I suppose, to kind of ramp up the competitiveness of education. I suppose that would be the argument for it.
Right. And the other thing to remember is that, you know, these schools or the companies that run them, you know, they're not the ones who are, directing the money away from public school districts. It's parents, conscientious parents, making a deliberate decision to enroll their children in this school. So they've sat down and they've weighed their options, and they've said that this is what they think is best for their kid. And our funding system protects parents and protects the parents' choice in that way, because the money does follow the student to the school or the school district in which they enroll.
His name is Michael Van Beek, the Education Policy Director for the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. Michael, where can people click on to find more information about this?
They go to our website. It's www.mackinac.org.
Mackinac.org. Rolls off the tongue nicely. Michael, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it. Thanks for being along.
Thanks for having me, Tim.